there was a certain point in my life where I needed help and nobody was there for me. And I know what it's like when your back is against the wall and you have no help. For God to put me in this position where I can, you know, have my friend pay the bill, help them, you know, have a decent life and decent living, and see the smile in the face and give them opportunity, to me is the best feeling ever.
Welcome to Someone Like You, a podcast that highlights the experiences of women, immigrants, and people of color who are building empires, creating amazing things, and changing the world. Here, we celebrate underrepresented stories and unheard voices. On this episode, we'll hear from Ronnie Makati Ngoy, CEO and founder of Maintain Security in Los Angeles. His story traverses continents, from a childhood in the Congo and adolescence in Europe through building his empire in the U.S. We'll talk about blackness, being an immigrant, fighting all your life, and paying it forward. Let's start from the beginning. Tell me about your childhood. What do you remember about your childhood in the Congo?
It was good and bad. You know, the reason was bad is because of the political climate out there. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty hectic. And I've been through a lot, seen too much. But the beautiful thing about it is just, you know, being around my family, have my people around me, and the love, you know, that I received from all my family, including my dad and everything else, you know? Yeah. And, but other than that, I mean, this, it's not a country where you want to grow up in and try to start a life, or if you have dreams and aspiration, that's not a place you want to raise your kid at all whatsoever. Not because the country is not good. It's just because the people running the country, it's just kind of fair. All the laws and regulation that they're doing, it's just not cool. You know, so most of us, we just flee the country. We didn't go to Belgium because Belgium was colonized. Belgium colonized Congo, but a lot of us go to France, so it's easier to get there.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, because of, you know, history.
So how did your life change when you left Congo and went to France and then later to Belgium?
When I went to France, the only thing was opportunity, of course. The fact that you don't have to worry about is it going to be a war tomorrow? You know, it's just freedom. You know, it was a lot more freedom over there in France. But when I moved to Belgium, it was tough because I got involved into a lot of things, and the people that I used to hang around with, it was just not, you know, good people. Just circumstances and a situation. You know, the environment wasn't too good. So you're forced to be somebody that you don't want to be because of your environment, mm-hmm. you know? And I got involved into a lot of things. I was too deep in the game. I lost a lot of friends. And it was a wake-up call for me. You know, it's like my Latin teacher told me, he's like, Ronnie, you're either going to end up in jail or you're going to end up dead. She needs no future for me, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really alarming, you know? So I had to make changes.
Wow. So was there a specific moment where you realized you had to make a shift, or was it just this gradual realization?
I think when my friend Frederick got killed.
Oh my God.
That hit me. But it didn't hit me really as much, but until my friend Sammy passed away. That was my best friend since we were like 10 years old, 9 years old or so. And that really shook me. That really shook me. That's my brother. I mean, I never thought I was going to move to America. We always thought we were going to grow up together. We're going to do our own thing, you know, and we're going to, you know, be successful together as a team. And it's, I guess, you know, destiny is different, you know?
Yeah.
So that really changed my life. When he passed away, that hit me so hard. I was down for a long time, and I realized I need to make those changes.
And at that time, what did those changes look like? Or did you know what you wanted out of life that was different?
I didn't know what I wanted. I was just a very talented soccer player, and I had soccer on lockdown. I was doing really good. But then injury came and all that stuff, and, you know, I had to change my life. I had to figure out what to do because all I know is soccer, you know? So my dad gave me an opportunity to move out here in America, start over. and try to figure things out. I didn't know what I want to do, honestly. Besides playing soccer and hanging out with the boys, I didn't know anything else, you know? So I had to figure it out. I met this guy, which is my Muay Thai coach now. I met him at the gym. He was wearing like a MMA shirt that said Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, and all that. I was interested. I was like, man, this is dope. So I started talking to him. Then I started doing security. He introduced me some security work. I started doing small. And then I met my guy, Zach. And then after I started doing security with Zach, I realized, man, this is, I think I can do this. You know, this is a good path for me. But I still didn't know where it's going to lead me. I thought it was cool just to make money, you know? Yeah. It was a good way to make money. And years later, you know, I just started my own company. But yeah, it was gradually, slowly. It was a slow process.
Yeah, as it always is. So I want to go back and key in on a few things about your childhood that I was curious to ask. First, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do when you grew up? Was it around soccer or was there some kind of other dream for you?
It was either soccer, but I always knew that for some reason, me and my boy Sammy, RIP man, Sammy, Frederick, and all my guys, Sebastian, all the guys I grew up with, my whole crew back in the day, we should talk about music, right? Oh, we're going to do music, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're so inspired by American music, you know what I mean? Like the whole American, African-American culture out here. So we're like, man, and I always knew that I was going to be an entrepreneur. Like for some reason, mm-hmm. somehow, somewhere, I knew I was a businessman, but I just didn't know. You know, I was in the back of my head. I was like, man, I think I'm built to be a businessman, but I just didn't know it really. It was just like a small, it was just a thought. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, as I move forward, I look at it now. I'm doing it what I was thinking back in the day, but I didn't know it was going to happen the way it did. You know what I mean?
I love that. So I'm curious because you talked about really connecting with the African American culture. And, you know, you grew up in Africa for part of your life. I'm sure that influenced your culture, your upbringing, and then lived in Europe. Like, what was your concept of blackness or what it meant to be black as you had all these different experiences? And then how did it change coming to the U.S.?
To be black is being proud of where you come from. I mean, we have especially us African from either Congo, especially me, I'm from Congo originally, but like anybody else, you know, from Africa, we're really proud of our heritage and where we come from. That's just being black for us, being proud of everything that comes with being, you know, coming from wherever you come from. When I moved out here in LA, it took me a while to adjust with the African American community because I wasn't accepted. I always remember I took some classes here and there at El Camino College. And at the time, I remember this African American guy told me, I'm a sellout because I have an accent and I'm not from here. So I'm a sellout. So I was upset. I was really upset. I looked at him. I say, listen, brother. I said, how many languages do you speak? Right. He said, English. You're cool. I said, you speak English, right? I said, listen, I'm from Africa. I was born in the motherlands. I speak Swahili, which is my language from where I come from. I speak Lingala. Which other language do you speak besides English? If we have to go back to our history, you don't know nothing about where you're coming from. So if you have to choose between you and I, you just sell out. Because I'm still very close to my culture, but you're not. It's not because being hood doesn't make you tough or doesn't make you, you know what I'm saying, that guy. You feel me? And so it took me a while to, you know, to be able to adjust with Africa. Because I feel like there's such a strong battle between African-American and African from the motherland. I'm not saying, you know, they're right or, you know, we right or they're right. It's just something that's been happening for so long. Some African from the motherland feel like African-American and not black enough because they're not connected to the culture or to basically, you know, the motherland. And so African American feel like we set up because we're not connected to what's going on out here. You know, it's very different. It's a crazy situation, you know, between both. And it's really sad because at the end of the day, we all have, you know, we all the same color. We all black, you know, everybody's trying to, oh, because I was born there, so I'm more blacker than you. Because I'm doing this, I'm more black than you. You know, it's an ongoing battle that's really doesn't help any, you know what I'm saying, any one of us. It doesn't help us at all. It just slows down. It just slows down.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. So then you have this other layer of being, you know, an immigrant, I guess, a few times over. What does that word mean to you? And how do you think leaving your country multiple times, your home country, has influenced your life?
being an immigrant and moving from country to country is not that hard because, you know, especially being Europe, because we still speak French as the main language, which was easier. The only thing was be accustomed to, you know, different people, you know, new environments. I feel like moving to America was the most challenging because I didn't speak the language when I came here. I didn't speak a word of English. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know what thank you mean. I didn't know what hi mean. I didn't know nothing. So I had to start from, it's almost like being a baby and I have to learn how to speak again. You know, I have to learn to speak for the first time. So like I remember I used to walk around with a French English dictionary just to be able to understand what everybody's telling me. When somebody's talking to me, I don't know what they say. So I'm like, I'm looking at the dictionary. I'm like, oh, okay. So that allowed me to be able to respond back to what they're telling me, you know? So it was tough. I mean, culture shock, it was really hard. You know, everything, you know, the culture right here is different. A lot of things are different. I had to, you know, to adjust. But I feel like the fact that I traveled to so many places, I was able to adapt a lot faster than some people. Mm-hmm. You know, I can be in a certain environment and I can definitely peep the room, see what's going on and be able to adjust based on where I'm at, you know? I think that was the best. Yeah, I think, yeah.
It's crazy because I think there's this ignorant perspective that many people hold around people who seem different from them. And in reality, a lot of those people who've come to the U.S. from other countries, the majority have so much intelligence and rich life experience that the other person doesn't have. Being able to speak multiple languages, that adaptability, navigating different cultures is so incredible. And, you know, people want to focus in on the fact that they're different or, you know, don't speak the language yet. It's crazy to me. I can't believe it.
Well, yeah, without a doubt, for sure. I think that's something that tripped me out for a while. You know, everybody was so much more focused on, like, you don't speak the language, you're not doing this, you're doing that, but nobody looked at it. I told someone one day, I was like, do you know what it's like to you? I told him, I think this one guy that I was talking to, I said, listen, I want you to pack all your stuff, move to, let's say to you in France, let's just say France, it's easier. Mm-hmm. Move to France, you know, move to France where you don't speak the language, you don't know anything about the culture, you don't know where you're gonna go and try to find a way to survive, make a living, you know what I'm saying, make something for yourself. And becomes what's called successful. See how hard that is. You know, it's not easy. A lot of people, you know, it's not easy at all. It's a tough thing to basically do. You know, a lot of people don't look at that way. All they look at is like, you don't speak the language, so you're not accustomed to this, and that. You know, it's very unfortunate. I feel like if we take time to get to know people, we learn a lot more instead of judging somebody based on one or two things that you know. So
yeah, absolutely. So shifting gears a little bit, I know you had a lot of rough kind of challenging experiences through your adolescence and then found your way into like MMA, Muay Thai. Tell me about the role that fighting has played in your life.
Fighting has always been part of my life because I always had to fight for everything. You know, from the moment I left Congo to go to Belgium to everything else, I always had to fight for myself and for what I really want, because I wasn't born with a silver spoon. You know what I mean? Like everything, like nothing was handed. And I feel like when I transitioned to martial art, I feel like it was just the same thing. You know, it felt good. It felt good because it was challenging, you know, and instead of hating the challenges, I just embrace it, you know, and that was it.
And so you kind of got your toe dipped in the security business. How did you transition that from, you know, a way to make money into a real sustaining successful business?
The way I did it was, you know, starting from the bottom, I had to learn every angle of the business. You know, I started, you know, my first gig was working Black Friday, which was the worst thing ever. Lord have mercy. Mm-hmm. Work Black Friday, I was in pain. If I tell you how much it paid me, it was embarrassing, you know. But I didn't know any better. I thought I was doing something, I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. And as that, you know, evolve in a business to figure out the angles, figure out how this work, how much you charge, what's it called, per guard, and having the right people and the right mentor around me that allow me to create what I have right now. And also, I made, what's it called? as I grew in a business, my network grew also as well. Mm-hmm. And having a strong network, they're always gonna get you gigs. You know, because a lot of the gigs that I earned is because I knew somebody who knew somebody, and that person worked with me before, and they knew my work ethic, my reputation was strong, to help me out to basically be where I'm at today. It's all word of mouth, you know. And I think the one day when I decided to start my business, I was hanging out with my boy. We're doing security for a very well known guy. And I told my boys, man, we can turn this into a money thing. We can definitely turn this into an empire where we hire our own people and we start doing it. My boys, man, you crazy, man. You an African superstition, you crazy, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, man, let's try to figure out how much it costs to start an LLC, insurance, everything else. Everybody thought I was crazy. Nobody wanted to do it. So I did my research, figured it out. I put my own money, and next thing you know, I made it happen. It wasn't easy. It was hard. It wasn't easy at all. You know, it was a tough road. But, you know, I made it happen. And the same guys, all my boys, they're like, oh, man, you shouldn't be doing it, blah, blah. They all work for me now. But I put them in a position of power. I make sure all of them are, like, management position. You know what I'm saying? I already took care of my guys, every single one of them.
I love that. So what were some of those specific challenges? Like, are there any that stand out as, like, oh, man, that was really rough along the way?
You mean as far as the business aspect or just the field itself?
Yeah, as far as just building your business, your kind of journey to where you're at today.
It was tough because, you know, you try to go 100% legit, you know, and it's like the insurance is expensive. The reason why a lot of security companies don't do what they do is because the insurance, to get the insurance, is very expensive. Mm-hmm. And the profit you're going to make is not that much. I don't care what nobody said. Anybody in the business will tell you, like, because first of all, a lot of companies don't want to give you the type of insurance because it's a high risk. It's high risk, especially if you're working bars and lounges, just like I do. It's high risk. So be able to get around it, be able to figure things out. You know, it was really challenging. There's a lot of competition. You know, competition is fierce. You know, it's a cutthroat business. But that's why I tell everybody, having a mentor is very important. Having the guy that I have right now in my corner really, really smooth things out. Because he's been in the business for like 30 plus years. The guy's like, he's amazing. And a lot of things that I didn't know, he kind of taught me all that. And that kind of helped me out with my business. That's how I grew. I basically, listen, he pretty much gave me a roadmap and I followed every single step.
Hmm.
And it worked out.
And how did you meet him?
I met him, I was doing security at a venue. And he used to come maybe like once in a while, right? You see him, hey, how you doing, man? Good. You know, spoke real quick, but nothing really major. I think one day I called my guy over the radio. I'm like, hey, man, let's switch up. I'm gonna go to the front. I want you back inside. So I'm going outside. I'm chilling. He's coming out, and he's like, so how you doing? I'm doing great, man. He shook my hand, and he put his business card and a $50 bill. He said, give me a call. Mm. I was like, what? So I'm looking and I was like, man, just give me $50 for what? I didn't understand it. It kind of tripped me out. So I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to look him up. So I looked him up and I realized, man, this guy's been in business for a long time. He's big time. Even it's all his team, it's a bunch of FBI guy, you know, a lot of law enforcement guy, very, very big time. And so I called him up, you know, I was like, why? He said, I've been watching you for 6 months. You remind me of me when I started. So I will help you out. But when you make it, I want you to bless somebody else.
Mm.
That's all I want you to pay it forward. That's all I want from you. Bless somebody else. See, you're a good dude. I can see it. You have a good heart, you know, and I see the way you interact with everybody else. Everybody likes you, and I like you too. And I want to make sure that, and I will help you as much as I can. Just follow my leads, and you'll be successful. I say, okay. And as soon as I follow him, I got my insurance. I got my security insurance. It's really hard to get. I got everything I needed, just like that. Boom. In a matter of like, I met him like, I think in, I'll say 3 years ago, in a matter of 2 years, I had everything as far as like all my insurance paper, everything was ready to go. Like every venue, every time I sit down with an owner, they look at me like, do you have this? Yes, I do. Do you have that? Yes, I do. Do you have what? Yes, I do. Oh my gosh. They all tripping out because most of the security company, they operate, a lot of them, for certain, you know, certain gig, operate illegally, I would say. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have the right, what's it called? The right insurance, this and that. But the fact that I had everything situated, they were shocked. I mean, I want to do business with this guy. you know, and within, I would say within 8 months, my business grew from where I was at to over a six-figure business, way over six-figure was making, you know, by the grace of God, you know, I mean, I'm very blessed, I can't, you know, I can't complain.
So you've talked about, you know, obviously there's a lot of physical skills, a lot of hard skills involved in running a business, but a lot of the things you've touched on seem to me like just kind of the personality of you and being a good person. Like, how has that influenced like carving out this niche for yourself and setting yourself apart in a really competitive industry?
It, you know, it comes down to, first of all, like you gotta be a people person. Mm-hmm. The reason why I'm very selective on who I'm hiring, especially in these fields, because a lot of people hire, I can hire a bunch of goons, bunch of guys like over 6'10", big boys, I can do that. But that's not what customer want. Customer don't care how many people you shot or how many people, you know what I'm saying, you drug that. They wanna feel comfortable with you or around you. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to be a people person, you have to be able to, and I think having that skills and be able to read a room and be able to adjust based on my environment really helped me out a lot. Really helped me out and definitely set me apart from a lot of people in the business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And honestly, that's what everybody's telling me all the time. Man, you're such a good dude, man. You're a good listener, man. You're so cool, blah, blah, for security guard. You're so cool. But why are you so cool? Why? Because I feel like when you walk into a venue, you set the tone. Mm-hmm. As a security guard. When you walk into if you and I go to a bar or go to a club, the security guard's gonna set the tone of how we gonna view that place. If security guard is very, you know, he's warm, he's, you know, he's smiling, you know, he's making jokes, you're gonna feel comfortable, man. This is a cool little spot.
Yeah.
Your mindset is already like, man, I think we're gonna have a good time. But as soon as you walk in, but if you walk into a venue where security guard is, you know, he's just mean and he's just very short, you're not gonna feel too good about it. It's gonna shift your mood. And I tell my guys, all my guys that I do hire, I say customer service first. Hiding is the last resort. But I hire guys who can be very diplomatic, where they can definitely handle business if it comes into it. But they know how to talk, they know how to handle themselves, and mm-hmm. they're also a people person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and it's funny because, you know, we met through some friends at a club and that definitely struck me because I didn't realize you were part of the security team there because you were so personable. You're just one of the guys.
Right, I remember, yeah. But I feel like you got to be like that, you know, because if you're not, it's gonna create a lot of disaster because if something were to happen and customers in the way, as soon as I walked in, by the way, security guard was already mean to me. This is not, it creates too much drama. So if you want to avoid all that, just be personal, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, every guy, every venue that I run, you can check all my guys. Everybody's very, very, very personable, mm-hmm. you know. And that's one thing that I emphasize the most. So that's why I'm so selective in who I'm hiring. Very selective. I only hire to either word of mouth. Or if I know you from, you know, back in the days, I work with you and I know that you, you know, you can handle that type of environment, mm-hmm. you know, so, because I want to maintain the image, you know?
Yeah.
That we built over the year.
So now you've built this team around you and a reputation for what your company, your brand represent. Mm-hmm. What is it like to be the boss or really the leader of those people? Is it a responsibility? Do you enjoy it? Like, how do you bring out that side of the people that you hire and ensure this really great customer experience?
Honestly, nothing has changed. Just more responsibility. You know, I'm still the same me. You know, I'm still, you know, nothing has really changed. I mean, all my guys know I don't micromanage. So every time I visit my place, my guys somewhere, I do expect them to know what to do. You know, I don't check up on them. I trust them. I trust my team so much that I can give them everything and they're going to handle business without even me have to second guess because they know the objectives and they understand like what we all try to accomplish as a team, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I feel like I'm playing soccer again because we're all on the same team trying to accomplish the same goal. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so what's that goal today? I know that at one point you wanted to build the biggest security company in the world. Is that still your goal or has that changed?
It's still my goal. And honestly, I'll be honest with you. Like when I started figuring out what I wanted in the security field, I just wanted to do like bodyguard, executive, and like executive protection. For some reason, God got me, you know, God shift my focus into bars and lounge, and mm-hmm. I excel very well. And I just took over, I think, the entire block in like, man, in like less than a year. Took wow. over all the businesses. Like if you go to East LA, North Highland Park, all those venues, it's my team, you know, and now I'm just like, okay, now like that we build that. I have a lot of people reaching out to me now. I got a meeting coming up after all this is over. I might take over like over 19 location.
Wow.
But I was about to take over before the whole like pandemic happened.
Yeah.
And then I had to reschedule our meeting with that company. And so, but we're looking at doing it again once everything get back to normal. So that's 19 venue right there. After that, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm thinking about investing in different things. So we'll see. But definitely, yeah, I'm trying to have this whole security lounge bars on lockdown.
I love it. So how does it feel having come really so far and overcome so much? How do you feel today? Do you feel like you made it? Do you feel like there's more to go?
I mean, there's always more to go, you know, because mm-hmm. you never want to be satisfied. You want to keep pushing, you know, keep pushing the boundaries. But I'm just grateful, you know. Definitely the grace of God got me where I'm at, you know, and I thank God that every day, because I wouldn't be able to do it without it. You know, because God put me in a position where, man, he just opened a lot of doors for me. You know, he surrounded me with the right people, you know, that helped me out. And I'm just grateful. I'm just trying to take it all in. Because, you know, the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, we always watching TV and we always hearing about all this, like, what's a success story? Somebody that basically came from nothing and made it. Mm-hmm. It was like, man, this is beautiful, but is it going to happen to me, though? But, you know what I'm saying? And yeah. The fact that I'm living it right now. I'm living that dream. You know, I came from nothing and I made something happen. I, you know, I created a pretty successful company, and it's like, well, it can happen. If you stay focused, dedicated, you know, it can happen to any one of us. You can make it happen, you know? So yeah, I'm just taking it all in. I'm just grateful. It's like grateful. Without a doubt. I don't take it for granted. I don't floss. I don't go out there, you know, I don't do none of that. I'm very low key, super low key. You know, and I'm just, because I know what it's like not to have anything, yeah. and I know what it's like not to have something. You know, so
what do you think, if you could nail it down, what are some of the keys to your success?
Honestly, I'm a strong believer, so I always put God first. You got to have God, man. You got to have some type of guidance, some type of spiritual guidance, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I put God first, Christians. I put God first, and you got to be dedicated to what you're doing. You dedicate. I know a lot of people take that very lightly. Yeah, dedicated. No, you got to be dedicated, and you really got to put in the work. I know that because it's almost like, you know, you play basketball, so you already know if you play sports and two people have the same skills, who's gonna make it? Whoever's decided to put in the work every day more. Mm-hmm. And the other person, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like if you're willing to put in the work day in, day out, you will definitely, you will be successful.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Where did you get that work ethic from?
I got it from my dad.
That's what I thought you would say. Tell me about your dad.
Oh, my dad's my everything. My dad is like, man, my dad's my biggest inspiration. You know, I see everything he's been through and everything he accomplished, and I've seen it, I witnessed it. And to be where he's at right now, to me, is just like, it's a definition of hard work always pays off, you know. And I look at my brothers now. I'm trying to make sure they stay, you know, they stay grateful. You know, I want to make sure they still humble, you know, because mm-hmm. like they were born when my dad already made it, so they haven't really experienced the struggle the way I did, you know. So sometimes I have to remind them, yo, you know, be humble. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you know what I mean? So. And see what my dad has done. It just motivated me. You know, like everybody always say, like, what's your inspiration? Oh, it's, I don't know, Jay-Z or, I don't know, Beyonce or, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, whatever. But me, he's my dad. I couldn't do it without my dad. You know, seeing him doing what he did, you know, it just inspired the hell out of me. And I'm like, I'm going to be just like my dad. and definitely better than him. He's my biggest kid. I would say my dad is my competition. I want to be bigger than him, you know? So that's what motivated me and keep me going.
I love that. I love it. So you already mentioned he's one of your biggest inspirations, but what are some other ways that you stay inspired to keep grinding and keep working hard?
I never want to get back to being poor. I know what it's like to be poor. I know what it's like to when you have to make a choice between putting gas in your tank to be able to get to work or eat. You know, I never want to get back to those moments. Those were tough times, and I learned my lesson, and I never want to get back to basically that, you know, that position. It was tough. You know, being broke is not fun, you know, so I never want to get back to that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, so keep me going. And I want to make sure also, like, when I get, you know, I'm thinking about my future. I'm like, okay, when I have kids, I want to make sure that my kids never have to live what I live. But I also want them to understand that you have to work hard for everything. You know what I'm saying? I can provide a way for them to be successful, have better opportunity. But I want to make sure also that they work hard for everything. You know what I'm saying? So that just motivates me. You know, I'm just focused on the future. You know, that just motivates the hell out of me.
I love that. What does it mean for you to be able to create opportunities for other people around you?
It's the best feeling ever. The reason being is because there was a certain point in my life where I needed help and nobody was there for me. And I know what it's like when your back is against the wall and you have no help. You have no one to, like, you know, give you a hand or, like, reach out to you, but, yo, I got you, you know? And to me, for God to put me in this position where I can, you know, have my friend pay the bills, you know, help them, you know what I'm saying, have a decent life and decent living and see the smile in the face and give them opportunity, to me is the best feeling ever. Because it's cool to make money, yeah. It's cool you want to make money or whatever, but I think the best feeling is when you can help somebody else. I think it's the best feeling ever. Just seeing them smiling and see their joy, to me, that just complete me. It made me feel good. You know what I mean? Feel okay. I love what I'm doing because of that. I live for that.
Giving me chills. All right. Well, I'm almost to the end. I have a little lightning round that I like to ask all my interviews. So just go real quick with the first thing that comes to your head. All right. First thing that comes to your head. Number one, what scares you?
Failure.
Okay. What are you most proud of?
What I've accomplished. How far I've came.
When are you at your best?
Under pressure.
Mm. How do you define success?
Be able to give other opportunities.
Mm. And how do you want to be remembered?
Someone that created a legacy, you know. That's a tough question. Dang, that's a tough question. That's a good person that opened a lot of doors for a lot of people.
That's a good answer. That's a good one. That's a great note to end it on.
I love it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was just amazing to hear your story. It was so inspiring for me personally. I'm sure it will be so inspiring for many others. And congratulations. Like, I'm just so happy for you. You have so much to be proud of. And I know that the success is just going to continue to skyrocket.
If you enjoyed this episode, stay tuned for more to come. Or visit LizMarieStrategy.com for more resources, stories, and insights for creatives and entrepreneurs.